Howdy, friends. Thanks for joining us on the All Terrain Podcast once again. Today, we've got a treat for our Jeep-loving fan base, although, for all I know, that's just Brent. Hey, Brent. My guest today is Chris Scipio Poldervaart. Did I say that right?
Yeah, very good, actually.
From O3D Jeep's channel on YouTube. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Happy
CPO.
To be here.
CPO, that's CPO. Your, CPO, that's your handle.
Yeah, that's been my nickname for many, many years. And I'll go ahead and clear the water on this. A lot of people assume that that means chief petty officer. I am not Navy. Nothing against that. But it actually is a derivative of my first and last name, C and PO for Chris Poldervaart.
Awesome.
Long story I won't get into, but just wanted to make sure that people know that I'm not a chief petty officer.
Okay. No worries. So CPO here produces the O3D Jeeps channel on YouTube, and that used to be Overclocked, or is it currently, there's some sort of relationship between those two names?
Yeah. So O3D Jeeps stands for Overclocked Jeeps. It's just okay. A shortened version. And it started out, Overclocked is the name of my Jeep. So it started out with me building my Jeep and a channel around that. And then I bought my son a Jeep and started building his. So we became Jeeps plural.
Right.
And so I had to sort of evolve the channel. So it became Overclocked Jeeps. But then when you try and tell people, because I have that, you know, kind of leet speak, I have the last E in Overclocked as a 3.
Oh, right.
It's hard to explain to people how to go there. So O3D Jeeps was just easier to say.
Right. Cool. get back to my script here. So it's a lot of the channel's a lot of upgrades and trips and things dealing with JKs and TJs. You've got a lot of content, and one of the things one of the cooler things I see on the channel right now is your trip through Colorado on the Backcountry Discovery route. So I'm working my way through those videos right now. Some amazing scenery.
Yeah, thanks. That trip was 2 years ago. And I've got a lot of footage that has never seen daylight. So I originally started doing this sort of, I was kind of thinking this like Discovery Channel series where I was putting these 10 to 20 minute segments together, like day one, day two, you know, right. Just thinking if I was building a, you know, Discovery Channel show, what it would look like. And it took a lot of time. I think I got 3 episodes up. And to be honest with you, just got overwhelmed with a whole bunch of other stuff. Right. And the whole rest of the trip, which was about 2 weeks, is still left untouched. So I've been going back through recently and sort of pulling out nuggets from that trip and looking at that footage and, you know, throwing up a new video from time to time. It's been kind of cool reliving the experience. I'm almost glad I waited 2 years because it is really like redoing it all over again and the emotions associated with it. Cause it's been so long since I've seen that footage.
Yeah. It's super cool. Going through old stuff like that, you know, and you did a lot of, GoPro, driving footage, you know, and being able to see that scenery again is pretty awesome.
So I was out with, so this trip was me and my buddy Drew, who was on a motorcycle. So it was me in a Jeep and him on a motorcycle in this, like, it was like this dog and cat, like unexpected duo going out across the backcountry of Colorado. And the reason we were following the backcountry discovery route is because he's an adventure motorcyclist. So we sort of latched onto that adventure motorcycle routing, and they had it all mapped out where basically you can get from one end of the state to the other without touching, you know, very much pavement. There's a couple places, maybe 20 to 50 yards here, or maybe a mile here where you have to cross over. But the goal is to go from one end to the other almost entirely on dirt. So we followed that, and he had a GoPro on his helmet. I had a GoPro on a three-axis gimbal on my dash, plus I had a camcorder. So we kind of just tried to get as much footage as we could going along the way.
Yeah, cool. So your channel, you say this current channel started off with remote control stuff. What kind of RC were you guys doing?
So actually not this channel, but my YouTube experience started out with RC. I actually have a whole nother channel that, It's random. It's actually called Everything CPO because it's just everything that interests me. That channel started out as a remote control helicopter channel. It actually was called CPO Heli.
Oh, cool.
Originally. But I was into, a couple years ago, I got into doing, actually, it had been probably 5 years ago now, remote control helicopters, like the hobby class 3D flight. I built a custom designed and built a the CPO tricopter. Put plans out. A lot of people were using those plans. I built a hexacopter with a gimbal, and then used a Pixhawk for autonomous flight. And I would pre-program the flights using Google Map data, and then have it go run automated routes. I mean, had a lot of fun with that kind of stuff. I got into airplanes and some ground vehicles, but I ended up doing a lot of reviews and build videos for Tower Hobbies, Hobby Co. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of opportunities there, was hanging out at these events with people, but I just ran out of time to do all of that and got my Jeep, and then just started transitioning that whole thing over to Jeep builds and mods.
Yeah. Well, that's cool stuff. You know, I do a little bit of RC. I have a Phantom quadcopter, and I'm, you know, looking into doing more video with that. But one thing I would like is some of those remote control rock crawlers. Those look like they'd be tons of fun.
Yes, I actually just got the only RC thing that I've actually gotten in a very long time was an Axial. It's a 2017 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited model, and it is so much fun. It's got lockers on it. It's like it's so much fun.
Those things are like replica vehicles. They have differentials, they have drive lines, everything.
Yes. Yeah. They're way cool. They're almost out of the box, a scale, you know, meaning, you know, built to look and mimic exactly the original full scale. It's just 1/10 of the size, but you actually can learn a lot, about off-roading by playing with a scale off-road, you know, remote control vehicle, because it behaves sort of similarly when you get into an off camber situation, or, you know, how do you keep from flipping it, or how do you rotate out of something without causing too much damage? You kind of start thinking through those things, which I didn't really expect too much.
That's cool. Excuse me. So let's get to the good part. We're going to go back to the standard set of questions again. And hopefully we'll have CPO back on the show from time to time to talk about Jeeps and Jeep mods and adventures and stuff as they come. So I want to start with the questions so we can get to know you well. So ready to go?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So family or friends, who's on your Overland 4x4 crew?
I wish I could say it was family, but it's definitely going to be friends. My wife has zero interest in anything having to do with off-roading or outdoorsy stuff. Like, she won't even fake interest it. She just has nothing to do with it. My son, he's 16. Like I mentioned, I'm building a Jeep for him. I actually just finished putting the lift on it, and he's going to get his driver's license in June. So he's kind of interested, and maybe now that he's got this Jeep, he will go out Jeeping with me. But he's more athlete, like he's high school athletics, football, lacrosse. So that's where his time and energy and heart is. So he just doesn't find much joy in a 2.5 hour drive to go into the mountains somewhere. But I'm hoping that changes once he gets his own Jeep and he's able to drive it.
That probably will. The Jeep was my first vehicle, but not nearly as nice as your kid's Jeep.
Yeah, he's way too lucky.
Yeah. So
it's kind of, to be fair, it's kind of this. It only came to be because I was super excited about doing this Jeep, and so I kind of used it as an excuse.
Yeah, that's reasonable. So you got a couple. Do you go four wheeling there? You're in Maryland, right?
Yes, I'm in Maryland, which totally blows.
Oh no!
I spent most of my adult life in Wyoming and Colorado. So out here in Maryland is just ridiculous. So there's no place to legally go off-roading around here. I have to go 2.5 hours pretty much any direction. Gosh. West Virginia, up to Pennsylvania. You know, there's no place locally. I can't just, like, drive out a couple hours away and spend an afternoon. I literally have to plan an entire day to go wheeling. So that stinks.
I feel for you.
Yeah.
So what's your overlanding vehicle is the next question. Tell us about your JK.
Yeah, so it's a 2015 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited. So it's the four-door version because I'm kind of a soccer dad in a sorts. I bought it brand new. I rolled it off the lot with, you know, I don't know, 10 miles, 18 miles, something like that, and then haven't stopped messing with it since. It's been 2 years now. It's gone from stock to overclocked, trademark. I can't even imagine everything. I put a Dynatrack Trail Leader package, which is basically a Pro Rock 44 Unlimited front axle. It's got a 35 spline upgrade rear axle. I've got ARB front and rear lockers and an ARB air compressor under the hood. I've got a Dynatrack Pro Grip brake kit, which basically gives you larger rotors and gives you more leverage and surface area per rotation on the braking. I've upgraded the steering. I've got a top mount drag link, all Yeti. Steer Smarts is a really amazing company, and they have this product called the Yeti, which is a super way over engineered beef steering. So I've got all of their stuff: drag link, track bar, tie rod. I put Hutchinson Rock Monster bead locks on it. I've got 37-inch Nitto Ridge grapplers, Tom Woods drive shafts. Dual batteries. I've got dual Odyssey Extreme batteries with a Genesis dual battery kit. I've got a snorkel, which I tend to use more as a cold air intake than a snorkel. It's a rugged ridge, so it's modular. I can put the big like snorkel thing that you're used to seeing running up the windshield, but I actually have a low mount, so it comes up just at the top of the cowl, right at the bottom of the windshield instead of running up. So, you know, I'm not going to go submarine with it, but quite frankly, if I get to that point in water, I'm probably got more problems than air. Yeah. I've got a Pipes high clearance exhaust. I've got a Super Chips Trail Dash 2, running a level 5 tune on that. And then about a bazillion other sort of, eye candy type mods. And I've got a roll cage in it, seat covers, the works.
Yeah. And you've got a lot of that you have documented pretty well on your YouTube channel.
Pretty much almost all. I've got like 300 videos probably by now on my YouTube channel, if not that, pretty close. And almost all of them are me documenting the build from stock to where it's at today. Very, very few things do not have a video. There are a few things where I just was not in the mood to film and edit, and I just wanted to knock a project out. So I get a lot of requests. Unfortunately, those are the things that everybody's like, hey, where's the video on this? I'm like, oh, sorry, I didn't do that one. Right. But I try and do most all of them into some sort of a video.
Yeah. You know, if any of the listeners have ever Googled how to install XYZ on a JK, I'm sure you've seen one of his videos. I've seen your videos looking, he had a video about one of those hooks for the winch hooks. Didn't you do a video about the
closed loop the Factor 55.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm running a splicer on it right now, but I've done a couple of Factor 55 videos,
So your overland vehicle, I mean, so your JK is set up for four-wheeling. I mean, at 37s, that's four-wheeling territory.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's a daily driver, so, you know, I'm trying to, you know, everyone's like, oh, go 40s and, you know, 60 different, you know, it's like, yeah, I'd love to go really big. But I do have to drive this thing around and commute in it. So yeah, it is built as a very capable rock crawler off-roader. I'm less of an overlander. I'm more of a day trip, you know, get out, go over some gnarly obstacles, and then come back home.
Yep. So how do you guys carry your gear? Like if you're going out for a day trip and it's just you and a couple friends. I mean, you're not strapping stuff to the roof overland style necessarily.
Not so much on the roof, primarily because I want to keep the weight down low, right? And I also need the clearance because we'll go under low-hanging trees and things that even a CB antenna could be a problem at that point, getting hung up on stuff. But I tend to pack everything in the back and use like cargo nets. I have I actually have, in the very back, I have a, like a, I don't know if it's a Rubbermaid or some sort of a plastic toolbox type thing in the back that I have bolted down to the floor. And it's just got a little hinge top, and I put stuff in there and then hinge it closed. And that's where I keep all my random stuff. Yeah, most everything ends up just in the back. I've got some, you know, like I've got a shovel mount back there, and I've got a high lift jack mounted. RaptoWorks makes this modular mount that goes from roll bar to roll bar and spans across the back. And I have both a winch and a jack on that, which keeps it inside, protected from the elements, but also sort of out of the way.
Cool. Do you ever do any overnight? So like on your, talk about your Colorado trip. You were definitely camping on that. Tell us about your sleep setup.
Yeah. So the Colorado trip was, probably as close to, you know, quote overlanding that I have experienced. And we spent almost 2 weeks. The plan was, to camp, save money, you know, get out someplace, and then just find these stopping points along the way. We really didn't have a true, like, we're going to get to this city by this time or whatever. We just sort of went with where the day took us. And when it started to get dark, we'd figure it out. So we did have a tent with us and a little propane heater that failed to ever start.
Yep.
And in the Colorado Mountains, believe it or not, in June, it is freaking cold.
Yeah.
There's still snow on the ground. It was really chilly. And because of the elevation, which we're not used to here in Maryland, like we didn't even really think about it. Even though I'm from Colorado, I didn't think about the gear we had here not working up there, but we couldn't get at elevation that propane heater to light at all.
Was it a big buddy or a little
what's
buddy?
That?
Was it a little buddy?
I don't know what buddy? It was. It was Drew's heater. I don't know what it was, but it was a little self-contained unit with a little screw in small propane bottle.
Yeah.
And, we couldn't get it to light.
They won't work at elevation because of the O2 sensor in them.
That must be it then. We did camp a few times, but we sort of, cheated and bed and breakfasted we stayed in Telluride. We sort of made Telluride a home base for a little while and stayed in a little hotel, motel type place there, for 3 or so days. But yeah, we basically just went from bed and breakfast and, you know, those kind of places.
It's a pretty good way to tour, though. I mean, pretty comfortable, good food, pretty relaxing.
Yeah, it was really, and I like going and I like hanging out in like the town centers, like seeing like the little shopping areas and the restaurants. I like visiting those kind of areas. So, and it was, you know, because it's a long day out, especially for Drew, right? He's on a bike. That's a tiring
That's brutal
day to be on a bike. And we covered a lot of really rough terrain, which for me was, you know, just rolling over big rocks. But on a motorcycle, that's a lot of strength involved in that. So he was pretty much just whooped by the time we got to wherever we're going to stay. So having a place with a bed and a shower was a bonus.
Yeah, for sure. What do you guys, what are you eating on trips like this? What kind of equipment do you guys do, like backpacker food, home cooking, or mostly bed and breakfast?
We did a lot of backpacker food. I did some engine compartment, meals. So basically, I would take those backpacker, little pre-made meal kits, fill them with water instead of filling them with hot water and then letting them sit and then eating them. I would just fill it with cold water and then roll them up and seal them and then put them in the engine compartment.
Yep.
And then as we're driving down the road, you know, they'd heat up and we'd stop and pull them out and, you know, have a chili or, you know, whatever it was, stew. I did some of that. But most of it was, you know, in the evenings we treated ourselves to local restaurants or some sort of food. And then breakfast and lunch was just whatever we had, like sandwich type stuff or those backpacking meals.
Any, super awesome treat that you guys had on the trail that was like something you look forward to?
No, I can't think of anything specifically that we're like, oh, that was amazing. But I really did enjoy the sort of the process. Like we'd stop. I'm thinking right now, I'm going back in my brain, and there was this place that we stopped and I don't even remember where it was, somewhere in Colorado. I'll narrow it down to that, but it was late. And it was like this lake that nobody was at. And we had just stopped. There was a little country store place, but it was closed. It was getting dark. Our plan was to ride back that particular evening after dark and do it completely in the dark, which we thought would be really fun. And it was a hoot. So we stopped at this lake, and I just remember sort of this process of setting up the little, he had a little, hot water, container, and then a little propane like stove, portable backpacking stove that we used to heat the water, and just the process of setting all that up and then firing it up. And we hung out and chatted while the water's, you know, boiling, you know, and then we fill up our little bags, and, you know, it's just the whole process was really sort of enjoyable. Just the time spent together while we were sort of going through this process. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, totally. I understand. So the next question is everybody's favorite. As you're out there on the trail, you're eating backpacker food, it inevitably comes up. You got to poop. What do you do?
Find me a hotel. I do carry toilet paper and a lot of baby wipes.
Right.
So, you know, I'll go where I got to go when I got to go, and we'll sort it out later.
Yep. So you're a cat hole kind of guy when you have to.
Yeah, exactly. My preference, right, would be give me a toilet I can control for a little while and hang out. But I'll go where I need to go.
Yep. All right. So you're gonna have some probably more interesting answers than most guests. But for this one, what recovery gear are you carrying in your Jeep?
Oh wow. I've got the entire assortment. I don't have all of it all the time, although on this Colorado trip, I pretty much had most everything, other than stuff I've acquired since then. But, you know, I've got the traditional high lift jack. I think that's a super effective and useful tool in a lot of ways, other than just as a jack. And I've got this really gnarly, base. It's a jack base from RaptoWorks, the same company that makes the roll bar mount that I keep my jack on. And it's this very beefy, like, foot by foot, I mean, it's pretty big, like rugged base that you mount your jack to. And it's designed to, not only is it heavy, but it will grab onto any terrain you happen to be in. So, I have one of those. I have a kinetic rope in case I want to do some kinetic pulls. I've got a winch, with a synthetic winch line. I've got a Factor 55 splicer, thimble on the front of that. I've got the usual recovery strap, D-rings, tree saver, snatch block. I do have soft shackles, which I like. I prefer in most cases over the traditional steel D-rings, unless there's a reason why they won't work. But
why
I really
do you
like
those.
I like the fact that they're easy on, easy off. They're lightweight. They don't hold any energy.
Right.
So if there was a breakage, they don't become a projectile in the same way a regular D-ring would. They're just super easy to use, and I just really like them, and they're, for all intents and purposes, what we're using for them, just as strong, and effective. The key with the soft shackles you have to worry about is abrasion,
right?
Because they are made of ropes, right? So you have to be careful what you wrap them around. But I can wrap a soft shackle around somebody's roll bar, to winch them and right them up if they're starting to maybe get into an off camber, almost a flop over situation. I'll put a soft shackle around the roll bar and then use it to pull it back down. It's kind of hard to do that with a D-ring per se. So
right. They
just have a lot of uses. I do carry traction boards. I use Tread Pros, which I've completely demolished because I use them in a way that they weren't designed.
How was that?
I think they're designed primarily for sand or soft terrain, you know, get traction in those soft areas. I use them to bridge over rocks and, to bridge gaps. I mean, they're not really bridge boards. You can buy specific products to do that kind of stuff. But I just, anytime I need to like lever over something or bridge over something or ramp over something, I just grab those traction boards and, you know, they're all chipped off, and but they still work. They work great. So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're driving on them. It's not like they need to look good, right?
Yeah, yeah. And eventually they'll probably break enough that I need to replace them. But for now, little corners broken off or little cracks, they don't really, they still give me traction.
Yep.
I've got the traditional sort of shovel thing. One thing I do have that not a lot of people have is I have a land anchor. I use land anchor, probably more overlanders than off-roaders. I'm using air quotes. I use that in the Colorado trip more just to play around, and test it and see how it worked. But, it really is effective.
You had the video where you drove up into, a snowfield.
Yeah, there was actually a huge, that was outside of Silverton, Colorado. There was this huge snowdrift that covered the road and everything. We were trying to head out on this path, and we just came up to this huge snowdrift. So we thought, we'll have fun and play around right here. It's funny because being a YouTuber, one of the most interesting parts is seeing how people comment to your videos. Yeah. And they make a lot of assumptions and they hate on you and they, you know, they think that they know exactly what you should have done in all circumstances.
Right.
But this particular snowdrift covered the road, right? And we're tread lightly type of folks, right? So I'm not just going to go off-roading through some prairie and destroy it. And actually around this was this like marshy wet, because all of the runoff from that, that drift area was filling up here. So it was like, it was either like a 2-3 foot snowdrift or just wet marshlands. So, we played on that for a little while. I tried to go over it without anything. And at that point I didn't have lockers. And, so I couldn't lock the front differential at all. So I'd get up there and I'd kind of get stuck trying to get on it. So then I put on chains. I used the chains to get across. And then on the way back, it was like a 4 or a 5 foot, like I had to climb up on top of the drift again to get over it. It was taller on the other side. And the chains weren't helping me at that point. I was just digging in and then starting to bury myself. So I was like, hey, this is a perfect opportunity. This is why we have a land anchor.
Oh, it's totally.
So pulled it out, threw the camera to Drew to film for me. And I used the land anchor and it got me, you know, out, that and the winch. The problem is, and this is where the YouTube haters always come in. They're like, oh, well, the video cuts between the time that he starts getting out and then he's finally out. It's like magic, you know, and they're giving me all this hate because I like video edited my way out as opposed to really getting out. For the record, I really got out of that using the land anchor. The problem I have with the edit is because Drew was recording and at one point, I stopped to talk to him and check on something or go out and dig or whatever. And then he thought he was recording, but he wasn't. It wasn't his camera. It was my camera. He had it open and he could see what was going on in the viewfinder, but he forgot to press record. So it wasn't until after I got out that we realized he wasn't recording. And by then we're already out. It's like done. So that's why that video jumps from me getting out to suddenly magically out is that, you know, it was operator error, but, I laugh every time people accuse me of like falsifying that video, but
telling me that
I should have gone around, you know, but I mean, we could have got, if it was an emergency, we'd have got out of there without a land anchor. No problem. I'd have gone around through the marshlands. I'd have torn up the property in an emergency situation, but this was not that. This was more just us playing around and having fun. Drew tried to go across it in his motorcycle. And we thought that would be fun. So he gets up and he's revving this bike. You know, he's got this enduro off-road bike and he gets, I don't know, 2 feet into it and just stops. That was it. And we had to dig him out. I had to use a little shovel and dig him out.
Probably a little bit easier to get a motorcycle out than a full-size Jeep.
Yeah, for sure. And that was one of the challenges of me going with him is, if he got stuck, no big deal. If I get stuck, it's not like he can help me.
Yeah.
Like his
kinetic
motorcycle
rope's not gonna
help me out. Yeah. So, so I was effectively on my own and I pulled, you know, I dug him out of that snowbank 2 days before I had to use my winch to drag him out of a rushing like stream where he fell over crossing this like rushing water crossing. His bike died, flipped over, started to take him downstream. And we put a winch line on that and got him out. But yeah, it was just so much fun.
Well, the next question is about onboard showers. I think you've already answered that
question.
Find
me a hotel.
Find me a hotel. So we'll skip over that one and talk about communication. What do you use for communication on the trail?
So normally, I've got the usual CB, radio. I use the Cobra, was it the WXR 75, which is probably the most common Jeep radio. It's the one with all the buttons and controls on the mic itself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's been a great little unit. You can bury, you know, it's got the main CB unit. You hide somewhere underneath the glove box, and then you just have the mic, that's exposed. That's what I run for the most part, because that's what pretty much all the Jeeps run around here, just CBs. I do have a small handheld ham radio that, I don't always carry it. It's in the Jeep right now. It's been in there for a little while. But I am a general class, amateur radio license, holder. So, I can use it legitimately and legally whenever I want. I just don't use it that much. I'm considering putting in a mobile unit with a little bit more power.
Yep.
But mostly it's the CB for convoys and trail rides. And then when I was with Drew, he had this helmet to helmet communication set up. I can't remember the brand. It's real common with the motorcycle guys, where basically you just have this, short range, communication, radio communication between the two bikes and can talk. And so I set that up in my Jeep. I had a microphone and a speaker, a Bluetooth speaker set up, and then he was on his bike and he had comm. So the entire time we're out running around Colorado, any of the video, you can hear us communicating like we're just sitting in the seat. We're just talking to each other the entire time. There's no button to push, no nothing. It's just constant stream of communications, which was really, really cool, because I felt like even though we were in separate vehicles, we really were experiencing everything together because of that communication style.
That's pretty cool. I wondered what radio frequencies that you use, an FRS or something?
I'm not sure. I don't remember. It was, if you Google like helmet to helmet comms, it's probably one of the major brands out there.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, you know, I wonder if they make like a headset thing that you could plug into just a regular truck.
I don't know. It would be really, I'm surprised. Like I said, the bike guys got it figured out, because that's really the only way they can communicate, right? Because you know, they won't have to pull a hand up to key a mic or whatever. But I'm surprised more people don't do it, you know, car to car like that.
Huh.
I actually did a video. I'm showing that off. If you probably go to my channel and search for communication or comms or something like that, you'll probably find a video where I'm demonstrating it with Drew out in the mountains. It was pretty fun.
Huh, that's cool. Yeah, I'll check that out. What do you guys use for navigation?
Road stuff. Google Maps is pretty consistently easy and accurate navigation. I use Maprica as a trail map system now. I don't know if you're probably familiar with Maprica.
I haven't seen that one.
I used to use Maplets, and then I guess they stopped updating, and people were having problems with updates. So now I use Maprica. I think it's designed for like ski resorts, but they have all kinds of stuff. All the off-road parks I go to generally will have a map in Maprica, and not only does it show you your location on the map, real time, you know, regular just mapping, you can do breadcrumbs and tracking and all of that stuff. It really, and you can record your routes. It's a really cool map. I use Gaia on Android from time to time. Actually, Gaia is what we used in Colorado. And I put this 10-inch Seikane head unit into my Jeep. So it's an Android 7.1.2 stereo. And so I run all the maps and maplets and all that stuff now on the stereo itself.
Cool. So... that's one. You mentioned one thing that they have in the East that we don't really have in the West is off-road parks. We don't really have those out here.
Yeah, you guys have forest.
Yeah.
National forest,
we have public land.
Yeah. That is one thing, and I miss, you know, when I was in Colorado, you know, I'm going to drive 30 minutes into the mountains and pick a dirt road and go. There's probably three. Now there is George Washington National Forest down about 3 hours away from me in Virginia that is sort of that feel. It's just federal or state roads. Some of them are really gnarly, two tracks and fun to play on. Some of them are a little bit more maintained that get you out into the woods. But yeah, for the most part, we go to off-road parks and pay annual memberships and then daily usage fees. And if you have a passenger, it's another fee. I mean,
oh, wow.
They're really sucking the money out of you left and right over here.
What is that? What do those fees run?
What's the cost?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going off-roading here in a couple of weeks, and I think we're looking at probably about $40 or $50 for a day trip.
For a day trip. And then you have to have annual membership as well?
Yeah, that one you don't have to have a membership, but usually it's like $15 or $20 for the year, and then okay. You pay $50 a day on top of it. That's Roush Creek Off-Road Park does the membership. I'm going to AOAA. It's Anthracite Outdoor Adventure Area, and they don't have you can buy a membership and then just go out whenever you want, kind of like a ski pass.
Right.
But, or you pay by the day, and I don't get out enough to justify paying the annual fee.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, it kind of sticks in the craw to have to pay to drive on a trail from my perspective. But on the other hand, you get a really nice, well-maintained trail, right?
In some cases, yes. It depends on the park and it depends on the time of year. But in general, yeah, I mean, they've got facilities. Some of them have, you know, like bathrooms, and some of them have a porta potty. Some of them have camping, and some of them have, you know, amenities there. Almost always they'll have air up stations where you can go, re-air up your tires after you're done for the day. Or they'll have a little store, or they'll have a shop, and they might have somebody to help you with recovery. If you guys get stranded, they'll have somebody that can come get you out. So there are those kind of things that you end up paying for as well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
Don't get that in the forest, I don't think.
No. But one thing we are getting out here is cell coverage. We're getting mobile coverage, some pretty remote places these days, which I'm not super stoked on. They have still the amateur radio repeaters have better coverage than cell phones right now still. But
that's the way it should be in the middle of nowhere.
That's what I think. All right, we're almost done here. So to talk about some other like non-driving activities that you like to do, either in conjunction with four-wheeling or on the side.
I like hanging out. We usually try and, on a day trip, we usually try and find some place to rally up after, before we head back home, because it's almost always a 2 to 3 hour drive home. So find some dinner spot to hang out and just like relive the day. That's always fun. When I was out with Drew, you know, like I said before, I really loved, you know, going and visiting the small towns, Ouray, Silverton, Telluride, like all these little small ski and snow resort type places, and just checking out the local shops and restaurants. And I always wonder what people do for a living. Like, what is there to do out here to get paid? And, you know, it turns out most of it's Jeep rentals or ski resort stuff, oddly enough. But I like just hanging out and experiencing what's around.
Cool. All righty. Well, I guess that's all we have for questions today. Thanks for joining us, CPO. Good talking to you.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. Thanks for bringing me on.
Yeah. So you guys can follow CPO on the YouTube, O3D Jeeps channel, and the same on Instagram. And the same on Facebook, Twitter.
Twitter. I'm O3D Jeeps everywhere.
O3D Jeeps everywhere.
Even O3DJeeps.com.
So, oh, there you go. Every opportunity. What about Snapchat? That's one thing we haven't mentioned.
It's funny. I joke with my 16-year-old. I always call it Snapface, but I do not Snapchat.
Yeah.
I to be honest with you, I barely Twitter anymore. I did get on Instagram recently. My Instagram account's very new, and it's almost like shockingly new. I'm like, oh crap, I'm starting from scratch. I should have done this 3 years ago.
Yep.
But I realized I've been on Facebook forever, and been active in Facebook groups and I have a Facebook page, and now I have my own O3D Jeeps Facebook group. But I realized there are so many people that just do not use Facebook. In order to engage with people, I had to get somewhere else. So I started doing Instagram, and I've actually really, really enjoyed it. It's been interesting. So my goal now is for the new year, for 2018, is to at least try and post something on Instagram every day and start building, my community out there. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, I like Instagram because my pretty pictures are always uplifting.
Uplifting.
It's hard as a video producer to like remember to take photographs.
That's the worst. Yeah. So long before I was doing videography, I was into photography. And then I found that all the pictures I used to love taking, now I don't have any pictures. It's all video.
I know.
When I go out wheeling, I don't take pictures anymore at all. And it makes me sad. So maybe Instagram is the way to force myself to get back into that.
Yeah. Hopefully it works. All right. Well, you can check our website. I'll have a blog post about this where I'll post all the links that we mentioned and products and videos and whatnot. So check that. The All Terrain Podcast is created by me, Mike Henderson, at the Reno Collective, a co-working space here in Reno, Nevada. We still only have one review on iTunes, so there's prime real estate available there. Subscribe where you get your podcasts and be sure to tell your friends. They may eventually forgive you.